regulations.
January 21st, 2010, Mayapur Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 17, and Text 2240 of Chapter 18, Part 1.
Something's beeping. Does that mean you might have power? Yeah. So, we're going to look at one of the demoniac qualities, that of envy, and you're all going to do an exercise on this with other qualities later in the class today. So if we have the quality of envy, and we would like to give that up. Does that sound like a good idea? Everybody like to give up envy? Okay. So the first thing is, if you try to just give up something or be detached from it, it doesn't work. Just like if I say, okay, everybody here can think of anything they want except coconuts. What happens? You think about coconuts. Whatever you contemplate, right? You become attached to whatever you contemplate. So if you're contemplating what you don't want, guess what happens? That's exactly what you get. And what we've seen, renunciates who are like, you know, that grahastha life, women, and then the next thing we know that's what they're doing, because that's what they're contemplating. So our process is not so much to be detached from Maya, but to be attached to Krishna. That when you, by the way, we missed you yesterday. Are you feeling better? No, but you're here anyway.
I missed you too much.
You missed me too much. Aw. Thanks. You were conspicuous by your absence. So the main way that we're going to conquer a bad quality is by getting a good quality. Really, in one sense, there's no such thing as bad qualities. Bad qualities are all misuses of something that's real and good. Maya doesn't have any independent existence. Maya means you're taking something that's real and good. Elephants upstairs. And you're using it in the wrong way. You have the wrong object, or using it in some way that's incorrect. It's just like, instead of ringing this bell, if I hit you on the head with it. So that's Maya. All right. So the first thing to do if you want to get rid of a bad quality or a bad habit is you ask the question, what do I want instead? So I'd like you all to learn that mantra. This is a good mantra in your life. What do I want instead? What do I want instead? Now, this is a very... I actually teach a whole seminar on this. This is just going to be a little brief taste. What do I want instead? So, what could you want instead of envy? Can somebody give me some suggestions as to what we could want instead of envy?
Can we just say what envy is? It means I want what he has.
Oh, envy is a complex thing. I want what someone else has, or I want what someone else is, or I don't want anyone else to have anything that's equal to or better than me. So even equal. You know, if we're not willing to have everyone in the world have as much money and opulence and intelligence and experience as we have, that's also envy. Like Jamuna said, that Prabhupada told her that if you don't teach what you know about cooking, you'll become envious.
Yeah.
If you know something and you're saying, I don't want anyone else to know it also. I want to be the only one to know it. That's envy. See, Krishna's not like that. Oh, she's coming that way. Oh, how do I get this working again now? After the power's off, how will I get it to turn back on again?
So you need to press
the button. I need to press the button.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also that remote.
Yes, okay. I think I got it. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't, but I hope it works. Is he going to go now? Pooja, he's going to go now? Thank you. Stay there the whole time he's there, and then lock up. Of course, in chapter 16, Prabhupada talks about the demons envying themselves. They hate their own nature. What's our nature? Who are we?
Servants.
Servants. Jivarasvara Paya Krishna Nityadasha. They hate the fact that they're servants. My mother used to say that. She'd say, you know, I go and pray, but whenever there's something in the prayer book about how we're just servants of God or children of God, I don't say that part. Because I don't want to be a servant. Okay. So what would I like instead of envy?
That I can be happy with what I have.
Okay.
Okay,
we might have happiness, satisfaction. What else could I want instead of
gratefulness?
Grateful.
Humility.
Want humility. What else could I want instead of envy?
Being helpful towards others.
Helpful. What else could I want instead of envy?
To be able to see good in others.
Appreciative?
Yeah.
Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
That was just shorter than so you can lose. Anything else we can want instead of envy?
Not
the
bitch.
Huh?
Not the bitch.
Not. Okay. We don't want any knots. We only want.
I don't know the English.
Did
that.
That's all. That's that.
Detached.
Good. I am detached from this red pen. Okay.
Oh, that's.
I'd like you to notice something. I'd like you to notice that these are not all the same. So if I want to get free of envy and you want to get free of envy, and you, we might choose different insteads. And that's there is not a one right answer to this question. So if you're working on becoming free from... I can't stand on my right. I can't put too much weight on my right foot. It's not my right foot is not yet right. At least I can stand without crutches. Okay. So we're going to pick one of these. For the purpose of this exercise, we're going to pick one of these. If any of us were doing it for ourselves, you might pick a different one than I'm going to pick now.
Okay.
Got that? If ever you make a negative goal, ask yourself, what do I want instead? By the way, you can never achieve negative goals. Negative goals are impossible to achieve. Just like if you go to the travel agent and you say, I want to go on a trip. Where do you want to go? Well, I don't want to go to Delhi. Okay, that's good. I don't want to go to Johannesburg. Okay. I don't want to go to Paris. All right. They can't give you a ticket, can they?
Yeah. Sometimes they come, oh, I don't know. Where should I go?
Sometimes when you're helping other people, they might say, I want to give up my envy. And you say, what do you want instead? Okay, can we learn this mantra? What
do I want instead?
If that's all you get out of all these days of my teaching you, that is a good thing. So we're going to take one of these. I'm going to take helpful because they all have
How about grace?
Let's take appreciative. That's sort of medium hard. I don't want to take something too easy because then you won't know how to do hard ones. I don't want to take something too hard because it's a demo and it won't take too much time. So when we really do a plan, we do more than just these two steps, okay? But we're just telling you two out of five steps. First step is you say, what do I want? Second step is you be very specific. What does it mean to appreciate?
I don't know what it means to appreciate.
If we took humility, we'd be here for a few days. Because nobody knows what humility is. All right. So if I'm appreciative, what would I do? What would I think? And how would I feel? And you want to be very, 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 very specific. Behavior is something you can see with a camera or you can hear with a microphone. That's what we mean by behavior. Okay? If I am appreciative instead of envious, what kind of things will I do? What will I do?
Glorify
persons. What other things will I do?
Serve.
I'll serve. And if I had more time, I'd teach you how to glorify and how not to glorify. What else would we do? Anything else you would do?
Could they say something how not to glorify?
In very general terms. Oh, you're nice, you're sincere. You're dedicated.
Be more specific.
Be completely, totally specific.
No, oh, okay. Really see a quality in my life.
Like, I notice every class you come and you take your notebook, you're really taking notes, you're paying attention to what's going on, you've been here for every class. I notice that you come on time, you stay for the whole time, you're staying wide awake. Thank you very much for being really interested in hearing this philosophy, because when I see how interested you are, I feel very enlightened to teach. And I believe this philosophy will manifest in your heart. That's how it works. You almost can't do it without being real. I suppose it's possible if you're a really good actor. But it's very difficult if you use that method of glorification to be phony. And if you use that method of glorification, it's almost impossible the other person won't accept it. You're pretty much guaranteed that you'll say it genuinely and the other person will actually accept it. If I say to you, "You're such a nice girl. I'm so impressed with how nice you are." You're like, "Oh, come on." What are you doing? It doesn't work. You know, first of all, I don't really believe what I'm saying necessarily, and you certainly don't believe it. In fact, it'll probably take you to the opposite place. You'll probably sit there going, "Oh, only she knew what I did this morning at 7:30. What happened tonight?" You know, it doesn't work. All right. You can put in general nice things as long as they're part of very specific. In order to do proper glorification, you have to really observe. And the reason so few people ever properly glorify anybody is we're all so darn self-absorbed. You know, we know what we've done, we know our sacrifices, we know our austerities, but we haven't the foggiest notion of anybody else's.
So that could go as another quality as...
It's part of this. You can't really appreciate, you cannot appreciate others unless you really notice what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It is impossible. You just can't. I'll give you a really funny example. So I'm doing these children's books. And I'm doing these books to teach children how to read. So I'm not an artist. I wrote all the text. And when I show people the books, they have beautiful color pictures and they're really nice artists. Maybe 7/8 of the people who look at it just look at the picture. Mm-hmm. I say, "Oh, what a nice book." And I'm thinking, "What about the words?" And it doesn't cross the people's mind that I'm the one who wrote the words, and maybe if they really want to show some appreciation, they read the story. Now, what to speak of, somebody, maybe one person out of 1,000 will look at the books I've written and say, "Oh, you merged phonics and guided reading, that's amazing." So if someone really sees the details, or the few people that say, "How long did it take you to do that? What did you have to do to do that? What's actually involved in this book?" You know, who asked you that? How many people care? They'll ask you that, but then when you start telling them, you see their minds going to whatever, what they're going to eat for dinner. We did some work in one temple where the devotees were all non-appreciative.
Non-appreciative.
It was criticism loka. We should have called the temple that. New critical dong. And I just did this exercise with people. We just sat in a group, and I would just go with each of them. And, of course, I had to talk to them first and try to observe. And then I would say, "You know, I've seen you do this and you do this. You know, I see you're in the kitchen every morning at 4:45.
and you went to the food bank and you got 300 gallons of milk, mm-hmm. and you turned all that 300 gallons of milk into the mirror, and that was all extra. You didn't need to do that for your service, and you were spending 2 hours every morning doing that, in addition to the fact that you're cooking in the kitchen all the time. You know, I just said that kind of thing about each development. And people become overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And it just, the whole atmosphere just changes. Very powerful stuff. But that means you can't be self-absorbed. You have to be absorbed in what other people are doing. And especially to notice other people's austerities. Because other people will tend to notice the results of things. Mm-hmm. They may say, oh, that's a beautiful garland. But they really don't think about that maybe you spend 2 hours every day in the garden mm-hmm. picking flowers or growing flowers. So they might say that's a very tasty subject, but they're probably not thinking maybe you grew the veggies. And what does that mean? You know, that means you're outside when it's cold and it's hot and you're weeding and dealing with the bugs and you're trying to get good seeds and maybe they're hard to get here and you have to get them from a foreign country and then you have to deal with customs. And you know, so if ever you can see the tapasya under the result and talk about that, people would just be so grateful. And that pretty much illuminates them. And the Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there's only two laws in the spiritual world, have prema and don't envy. And Prabhupada says the main component of the spiritual world is appreciation. But I didn't intend to talk about any of that. And what other behavior would you have if you were appreciative? Behavior, if you were appreciative, besides glorifying and serving?
Or being observant.
Observing. Okay. What would you think? Like one of the things I just mentioned, you think, is you would meditate on others' austerities. You meditate on others' austerities. Let's just be honest. Wouldn't you like it if people noticed our background austerities? How many people notice the background austerities that we do to get things done? Hardly anybody. How refreshing that would be. Isn't it? Meditating on those austerities. Also, you'd be meditating on others' good motives. I believe that everybody, even demons, have motives that are ultimately good. Everyone is looking for happiness, peace, freedom, love, friendship. Everyone's looking for something spiritual. So they may be doing it.
And maybe endeavors.
Endeavors, austerities, and endeavors. In other words, don't just look at the result. Look at the endeavor. And see what good... I mean, and when I was telling this in New Critical Realm, when I was telling this, thinking that other people... assume other people have good motives. One of the devotees said, that's really hard to do. I can't think of any good motive this person can have. And I said, you know, most people believe that they have good motives. Even if they don't, they believe that. A very rare person who's going to say, my motives are to cause as much pain and suffering as possible. That's very unusual. I mean, even the people working in the slaughterhouses, I'm sure, don't think that's how they think, you know, I'm working at a job to make money for my family and I'm providing food for people. And, well, they think their motives are good. Is it a good motive to want to provide for your family? Sure. Is it a good motive to want to feed people? Sure. They're doing it in a way that's destructive, but the motive is good. Okay. And what kind of things would you be feeling if you're a Christian?
Sorry.
Okay, you'd be feeling affection. I can't write on a bottom line very well, because I can't go down.
Compassion.
Compassion?
Gratitude.
Gratitude, definitely.
Respect.
Oh, definitely. Okay. Now, each of these things you could break down again, couldn't you? We could take each of these because they're general. This is a little sample, and we'll be doing this later as part of a group exercise. I decided today that I was going to merge a chapter 16 and chapter 17 group exercise because I wanted to do two things, and we only seem to have time to do one group exercise per day. You were sitting next to the batteries. I think the middle battery, there's a button. Push the button, hold it down for 2 seconds until there's just like a yellow light on at the bottom. Is it there? Okay. Let's see if this works. Wow. Oh. Now we have power. Now we have power. So I don't know if I should leave that on. The battery on, or we have power. It's okay. I was really, really, really excited. Need lights off. I was really excited yesterday to discover that I didn't like the PowerPoint that the MI put together. I didn't like the PowerPoint I had from Bhaktivedanta Matter, and that I already had my own PowerPoint that I made for something else that I could easily adapt. I was so excited. Hey, you saw this picture before? The three Vinas. So why should we care? Why should we care to know about the three modes of material nature? Because they affect everything that we do. Remember we talked before about getting somewhere? You want to get somewhere and you need a good map?
Yeah.
Think about food. So how do you decide what is food and what is not food? That depends on what modes are filtering you, are filtering your perception. Why does a bird think something's food that a cow doesn't think is food? They have a different, there's a different mode of nature that's filtering their perception. So you identify things differently. What's good? What's bad? What's favorable? What's unfavorable? What will get me what I want? We're interpreting that according to what mode that we're in. We're seeing something that matches our mode as, oh, that's going to satisfy my desires. That's going to meet my needs. So the scientists are looking for a law of the world. They're looking for some kind of... Can you see Giridhari there? Any of you ever been to Auckland? That's the Lord of Auckland. So, the scientists are looking for some law of the world, some unified field theory, and this is the law of the world. Because they can find the law of mathematics, but you know, mathematics might not be the same on Mars as it is on Earth. How do they know? Right? They don't know. Are chemistry, mathematics, and physics exactly the same all over the universe? Who knows? But this is the law of the universe. Because so generally people are controlled by the modes. We put ourselves under the control of the modes, and then the modes control us. So in goodness, the senses are illumined by knowledge. You feel a sense of enlivenment. Remember I said if you act according to your nature, you feel alive? If you're in the mode of goodness, you feel very much alive. You feel very energized. All of your senses feel energized and happy and satisfied.
So if you're not feeling energized, you're in the mode of ignorance or something?
Well, all of us, all of our bodies are affected by the mode of ignorance sometimes, otherwise we wouldn't sleep. You might be sick. Remember that the different modes battle for supremacy.
And sometimes you're going to be affected by, what did we say? Remember I asked you to learn a verse? One who's transcendental to the modes does not, what's that verse I asked you to learn? 14:22. Does not hate illumination. Come on, guys. Attachment and delusion, or long for them when they disappear. Let's do that again. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion, or long for them when they disappear. These are not spiritual, folks. It's material. Sometimes your body will be illuminated. Your body and mind will be illuminated. Sometimes it will be attached. Sometimes it will be deluded. You don't hate it. You don't long for it. You don't say, oh, I wish I could always be illuminated. Both. Both.
So sometimes you really can't even help it.
Oh, no, you can't.
You can try to bring yourself up to the mode of goodness, but if an outside mode is affecting you as well.
That's why Prabhupada said you should be neutral. Prabhupada does not say you can stop the action of the modes on the body and mind. That's not what he says. He says as long as you have a material body, the body and mind is going to be affected by the modes, but you can be neutral. You know you cannot stop it. Just go ahead and try. Good luck. Can't stop it. You can be neutral. You cannot let it affect you. You can remember that it's not you. You can tailor your service to the modes that are around you. We talked about that. Just also like you tailor your service to the country you're in and the weather and the season. And you decide what to grow in your garden by the season, don't you? You have gardens. You don't grow any crops in any season. The modes are affecting the different times of the day. Don't you do different things at different times of the day? We don't hold Bhakti Shastri class at 11 o'clock at night. Why not? So we structure our days. I mean, most people in the world work starting at about 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. And they quit work in the afternoon. Most people. Obviously, some people work night shifts, etc. But most people, why? Duh. You know, there are certain kinds of things that are best done at certain times. So as far as possible, you work with it. And you're detached. It's easier to work when we're trying to be spiritual with the mode of goodness. For materialistic people, it's really hard to work when the mode of goodness is operating. Most materialistic people just sleep when the mode of goodness is operating. They don't know what to do with it. They can't use it for anything. What do I do with this mode? You know, they don't understand it. Yes?
Is that why we go to something very early in the morning, that the mode's more good in the mode of goodness at that
time? Yes, actually there's one time, but according to Ayurveda, when all the modes are in equilibrium. Mm-hmm. That happens for about 45 minutes a day. That's early in the morning. Then right after that, they're in the mode of goodness. It's something like if you want to travel in a very crowded place, like Dubai. You've been to Dubai? The programs in Dubai start when they end every place else. They start at about between 8:30 and 9 at night. That's when the programs start. Krishna conscious programs. Correct. Because people have to leave their house at 5:30 or 6 to go to work in the morning. And by the time that they get from work to the program, it's between 8 and 9 at night because of the traffic. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Although it is very hot there also. No. Yeah, they told me in Qatar that when they go swimming, they swim only at night in cooled pools. Where I was brought up, we had heated pools. They said they have cooled pools and they only swim at night. Anyway, if you try to go somewhere in Dubai, or Mumbai is another one like that, You know, to travel what should be 20 minutes takes you 2 hours. But at some times of the day, it only takes you 20 minutes.
Yeah.
If you want to, or Washington, D.C. is like that. Oh, it's horrible. But if you go to Washington, D.C. at 2 in the morning, it's no problem. So there are certain times when each mode is active, then the things connected with that mode are easier to do. So spiritual things are easier when the mode of goodness is active. It's like, you know, a cleared highway. And trying to do directly spiritual things when the mode of passion or ignorance is active is much more difficult. It's like driving in a traffic jam. You can get there, but it's much more of a struggle. And that, yes, each of our bodies also has it. Each of our bodies is a specific combination of the modes of nature. That's what our bodies are. Our bodies, the modes of nature, have combined in a particular way. Just like you can take milk and sugar. The first time I had a sandesh, I asked the devotees, what is this? Oh, milk and sugar. I said, come on. No, it's just milk and sugar. I said, that's not possible. It said, well, a little lemon juice. I said, oh, okay. So you can take milk and sugar and combine them in so many ways. What to speak of if you take, you know, flour, butter, water. How many things you can make with flour, butter, and water. Especially if you can turn the butter into ghee. So Krishna can take passion, goodness, and ignorance and make so many things. So each of our bodies is a specific combination. I know you can say in general a human body is a certain combination. And in general a male human body or a female human body or a male brahmana or a female brahmani is a certain combination. But then we each have our own individual combinations of the modes. Also. And yes, it's also affecting us in the atmosphere. Different times of day, different places, different times of the year. The various modes are active. So when goodness is active in your body and in the environment, you feel illuminated. The mode of goodness is only active early in the morning. But if your nature is mostly in goodness, then you will feel that to some extent even if the environment is not favorable. Not as much, obviously.
Can that nature change by the influences that you put in your life with the foods that you eat?
Yes and no. We did read that in a previous PowerPoint where Prabhupada says that by practice you can cultivate a different mode. However, to some extent, you're stuck with some aspects of the body that you have. It's not that if you cultivate the mode of goodness in this life, that in this life, your body literally turns into a demigod. You know, the demigods don't sweat, and they don't need toilets. So it's not that if you really cultivate the mode of goodness. Of course, if you do, if you transcend the modes of nature, that kind of thing can happen. There was that devotee, what was his name, Vamsi? In the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati? And his associate said that in 4 months he didn't bathe, eat, pass stool, or urine. So that can be done. And mystic yogis can do that kind of thing too.
On the subject of that, I was really wondering, it says in 1840... there is no being existing either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems which is freed from these three modes born of material nature. So what about that? And like, what about people like Srila Prabhupada? Like,
well, it's Krishna himself, just like we do, uses absolute terms generally sometimes. Shastra, Krishna, the great devotees, they don't always have this ultra precise language, assuming that people are going to subject their words to deep analytical linguistic study and say, oh, every, that means every. Okay, well, Mother Yasoda must be under the modes of nature then. I mean, that's not how they talk. It's not how Krishna talks. Symptoms of the mode of passion, unlimited desires and longings, doing things for yourself, great attachment, great endeavor. Endeavor for satisfying yourself. Somebody in goodness may also make a great endeavor for Krishna. A mixed happiness and suffering. Remember, we talked about this fruit of mentality. They're looking for fruits, fruits, fruits. What's the fruit? What's the fruit? What's the fruit? What's the fruit? They're working really, 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 really hard to get a specific result. Someone in the mode of goodness may also work hard, but their satisfaction is in the moment.
What's the carrot?
What's the carrot? Like that for a donkey? Going for a fruit. Okay, in the mode of ignorance, can you read this? That's a real sign in China. It's an actual sign. So this is a mode of ignorance. Basically suffering. Again, remember that people are not generally purely in one mode or another. So a very active drug dealer who's trying to make a lot of money has some passion in him, not just ignorance. Now, there's often a debate about whether we make advancement by our own endeavor or by Krishna's mercy. And I really like this quote. Krishna is prepared to give bhakti yoga to everyone, but one must be capable of receiving it. That is the secret. Someday I'm going to research all the places where Prabhupada uses the word secret. According to one's attitude, Krishna becomes one direct advisor or Krishna becomes unknown. That is not Krishna's partiality. It is his response to one's ability to understand him. This is from the same purport. Krishna is equal to everyone, and according to one's ability to receive the favor of Krishna, one advances in Krishna consciousness. Now how? The more one advances in sattva-gun, the more his brilliance is exhibited by devotional service. But the more one is covered by Rajagun and Tambagun, the less visible his brilliance, for he is covered by these qualities. So our way of becoming receptive to Krishna's mercy is to advance in the mode of goodness. Okay, I'm going to stop here. We'll take a break until... Take a 10-minute break. Okay, till 5 after 12 by that clock, which is 12 o'clock by real time.